from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Dave Iverson. The Cutting Ball Theater is in San Francisco's Tenderloin neighborhood, an area known more for trouble than theatrical triumph. But Cutting Ball's current production, titled Tenderloin, takes those same neighborhood struggles and puts them on stage. The play's characters are all drawn from the neighborhood, created from extensive interviews the actors conducted with Tenderloin residents, and then stitched together into a story by writer-director Annie Elias. Elias joins us in the hour ahead, along with two of the play's actors and a Tenderloin resident whose story the play captures. The Tenderloin, next on Forum, after this. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Dave Iverson. When writer-director Annie Elias used to attend plays at the Cutting Ball Theater in San Francisco's Tenderloin neighborhood, she says she'd park close to the theater and dash in as quickly as possible, trying as best she could not to make eye contact with anyone. Tenderloin is a neighborhood whose descriptions usually include words like struggling or troubled. So Elias says she was an unlikely choice to help create Cutting Ball's current production, a play that's not only called Tenderloin, it's of the Tenderloin, with characters drawn from the neighborhood itself. Her cast of seven actors spent scores and scores of hours interviewing neighborhood residents, residents who the actors would then play on stage. In this hour form, the story of the play and the story of a neighborhood. Joining us, Annie Elias, the director of Tenderloin at the Cutting Ball Theater, which runs through June the 3rd. Good morning.
Good morning.
Here, too, is Mark Ellinger. He is a historian, essayist, photographer, and Tenderloin resident who is portrayed in the play. Mark, thanks for being with us.
Thank you.
And playing the role of Mark Ellinger in the play is David Sonico, who's an actor, also plays two other roles in the play itself. David, good morning.
Good morning.
And Tristan Cunningham joins us as well. She plays five different characters within Cutting Ball Theater's play, Tenderloin. Tristan, good morning.
Good morning.
So, Annie Elias, let's go back to the time when you used to dash in to the theater at Exit on Taylor, where this play is being staged. Describe what you saw then, and then I want to ask you about what changed.
Well, you know, I think, as I said, I was trying to avoid any contact, so I wasn't seeing much. I think that's part of it, that, you know, sort of closing your eyes, putting up a shield. And then it was also the experience of being in the theater. And, you know, the theater is right on the street. So, you know, I'm seeing a play by Ionesco and hearing shouting and bottle smashing outside. And so that was also an experience of trying to shut out what was happening outside of the theater.
And this play is really about bringing some of that shouting in some ways inside. What happened when the artistic director at the theater said, why don't you do this play?
Well, at first I was sort of like, I think you have the wrong person. You know, I have, like I said, I have little or no experience with the Tenderloin. It's a place I've tried to avoid on a certain level or not engage with. But, you know, I had done a number of these documentary theater projects with my students before, and they've always been really surprising and brought you into a place you never expected. And so I think Rob Melrose, the artistic director, you know, he had seen some of those pieces, and he felt like, you know, this is a way to increase understanding and to really get in deep.
So you got started by calling the person who's sitting across from you in our studio here this morning,
yes.
Mark Ellinger,
yeah.
And why did you call him, and what happened next?
Well, I did. My first step was, of course, to Google, and I found Mark Ellinger, just one of those really great, you know, serendipitous kind of happenings. And Mark has just been completely pivotal to the whole development of the project, and he's been at rehearsals. He really became our guide into the Tenderloin and our advocate for the project, and he really has been our guide, tour guide. He we literally met and walked through the neighborhood together. We went and sat in the brown jug and had a beer. And he literally introduced me to the neighborhood. And then, you know, through his openness and trust, gave us, you know, numerous, a long list of people who he thought were movers and shakers or just had good stories, you know, who were really insiders in the Tenderloin.
And Mark Ellinger, tell us something of your story. You were a successful musician, sound engineer, living in the Tenderloin, a place that where a lot of great music was recorded back in the 60s and beyond. And then what happened?
Actually, at that time, I was living in the Mission District. Over a space of about 10 years, I pretty much lost everything, my family, closest friends, my lover, my business, and ultimately my home and everything I owned. and it left me wondering why I was alive. It was the beginning of 1995, I was introduced to heroin, and it was amazing. It just numbed all the pain. So 3 months later, I was on the streets, and a few months after that, I lost everything because I couldn't pay the rent on my storage locker. So I was a homeless junkie on the streets of San Francisco for about 6 years. And during that time, when I could scrape a few extra dollars together, I would spend the night in residential hotels, many of which were in the Tenderloin or south of Market, the central city area. Anyway, I had cleaned up for about 6 months, and about a week before Thanksgiving 2000, I injected some contaminated dope into my hip, and a friend of mine found me wandering around 7th and Market, delirious on Thanksgiving Day 2000, got me into the emergency room. I woke up 2 days later watching pigeons and seagulls floating by my window on the fourth floor of San Francisco General Hospital. The surgeon came in and told me that if my friend had brought me in much later, I would have been DOA, and also informed me that they had nearly cut off my leg at the hip because I had contracted flesh-eating bacteria. I spent 2.5 months in the hospital, during which time I decided that I was done with all of that, regardless of what my life had been up until that time. I was just going to move forward. Whatever doors opened, I would walk through them.
And one of those doors turned out to be a camera
that
you got. And you started literally seeing the Tenderloin, seeing the world in a different way.
Yeah. After I left the hospital, I bounced around various residential hotels in the central city and landed in this one on 6th Street. And that's where I reinvented myself. And I'd been there for about 2 years when the guy across the hall was going to throw away a cheap little digital camera. And I took it and started photographing my surroundings. And that's how it all got started.
And Mark Ellinger's photographs can be seen at his website, Up From the Deep. And so the stories become part of this play. And David Sinaiko, I want to ask you, because you play Mark in the play, a little bit about the process of how you did that, how you went about interviewing Mark and beginning to develop this character, because the actors did the interviewing of the characters they would then play.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, Annie told me about her meeting with Mark and just said he was this great guy and had this terrific meeting with him and that she wanted me to interview him to potentially play him. And so I did a little research. I did go to Mark's website sort of late one night and ended up very, very late still looking at the website. It's a fascinating journey to look at his photographs and his writings about the area. And then I called him and arranged a meeting. And we sat in a cafe and talked for an hour and 15 minutes. It was the first interview I did in a series of them for the play. And I really learned a lot about interviewing while I was doing it. It's a very difficult thing, what you do and what journalists do, just to elicit from people their stories. We had a double task, of course, because while you're interviewing, you also are observing them physically, observing the rhythms of their speech with the intent of playing them.
And so, what is it that you saw? What is it that you heard in Mark that you then tried to turn into a character on stage?
Well, you notice all the really technical details. You know, Mark's a very big guy. He has a very distinct voice. He has very distinct gestures with his hands. He uses his hands to speak a lot. I'm looking at all of that. What I really got from Mark was his passion and love for what he was doing, which was documenting and learning about and writing about and telling people about the central city, including the Tenderloin. And so that's the thing that jumped out to me the most, was his passion and engagement with the place.
Would you be a little of Mark?
Sure.
For a moment, and sort of set up and then be Mark?
Yeah, all right. This is a story that Mark told me about an experience he had walking in the central city.
I've been up here taking photographs. I was walking by the Hugo Hotel, and he was the only guy out there. He was going the same way I was going. This guy had a backpack, a huge duffel bag. He was limping along with a cane. And I'd gotten some distance past him, and I heard him calling out, "Hello!" And there was only one person he could have been calling to, because there was nobody else around. And I could tell it was like he wanted help, right? And I'm always ready to do that. So I turned around and I went up to him, and when he introduced himself, he said, "I'm Still Bill." Now, if somebody came up to you and said, "I'm Still Bill," would you think, does that mean his name is Still Bill? Because that was the first thought that crossed my mind, Still Bill. But then I thought, well, no, he could be saying, I remain Bill. So I said, "Still Bill?" And then he recited this really deeply touching bit of verse. I'll see if I can. "I'm Still Bill, always was, always will. Had a wife named Lucille, had us a home down in Mobile. Come the war in Vietnam, they sent me off and made me kill. Come back a broke up man, no more home, no more Lucille. She gone and left me, but I'm Still Bill."
David Sinaiko playing the role of Bill. When you hear that, Mark, is that you?
My reaction to watching and listening to David is kind of multifold. I'm a really self-critical person, so part of me is watching in awe because I think he really does capture my speech rhythms, my speech patterns, and certainly my physical, my body language. But then the self-critical part of me is going, "Oh my God!" But watching him play another person, that self-critical voice is no longer there, and he nails it. He does, I gotta say.
One of the things about the play, as I read it, and again, I've not seen it yet, but reading the script of the play, Tristan, is that the characters are there, warts and all. Mark was saying that he feels a sense of being sort of critical, but that's part of what you're bringing in, right? You're not gilding these characters. You're bringing in all the ums and ahs and dark and light of who they are.
Yeah. Annie was really clear with us to really put in all of that, and I think what I realized in the process is all those ums, that there's something there. There's a reason why we, or keep pushing back our hair or stop for a second as we speak. There's a reason for all of those things. So it really does influence the way you play the character.
I want to hear one of your characters in a moment, but how has this experience affected you? Do you look at the Tenderloin differently? Has it changed you?
Yeah, I mean, very much so. Not being from here, but I've always heard of the Tenderloin area, you know, and moving here, you hear about it. There's a lot of, you know, things that you hear about it that are myths and things that are true and stuff like that. So, you know, entering into it, you know, I had those things on my mind, but, I think what the thing that's influenced me most from this is, you know, there are those things existing there, and we all see that, and that is definitely happening, and I don't think it serves anybody to say that those things are not happening, but there's so much more, and it's so much deeper than that, and there's so many unique, incredible people in there, and just a lot of what I wanted to do, you know, with Annie's guidance is, like, walk the streets and interview people. I was really drawn to interviewing people that I found by just walking.
Would you give us an example, someone you found and play some of that?
Yeah, this is a gentleman that is currently living on the street, and he's about around my age. Hmm. So,
young man.
A young man, yeah. That's my name. It means treasure bearer. I've been traveling to the United States since I was 16, so everything you're experiencing right now is pure survival. I mean, it doesn't suck for some people, because they've gone beyond confusion and lost their minds, but for me, I got all this personality, talent, intelligence, and stuff in my body. My health has been made to flourish, but my feet might get a little sore because, I'm always on them. But as far as, like, the condition of my entire being 100% healthy, I am. But, my hygiene grows extremely poor to the point where people are like, dude, you are interrupting my modern-day American convenience. And woo-wee, you're meeting me and I'm like the scum of the earth right now. But I'll tell you what you're doing. You're looking beyond what the physical senses can detect. You're using your spirituality because... there's nothing about me that's attractive. I mean, are there physical traits about me that are attractive? No, not really. Because when I look in the mirror, I'll be like, I'll get so depressed. I'm sorry. It's so depressing for me to display personality because then I think about my situation and I'm like, damn, I'm on the streets. But I have to display personality despite my situation because it's my purpose. So basically, I have to stand my ground in the face of suffering. Meaning, I have to deal with all these people, my own issues, and the natural cause and effect of living or surviving in the wilderness. The wilderness effect, meaning poor hygiene, sore feet, hunger, all these things, being rejected, being viewed as small-minded or less than nothing because of a lack of financial security. Now, yes. I'm pretty sure. If I was worth about $750 million, you get close to me, okay. Because, you know, if you can win my heart, I'll give you $50 million and think nothing of it. Because I appreciate the love you're projecting into my life. And in your mind, you're thinking, if I can get my hand on $50 million, I'm good. So, power because I have wealth. Women because I have wealth. Cars because I have wealth. Houses because I have wealth. Respect because I have wealth. I don't want any of that. But instead, I'll tell you what I have right now as we speak. I have pure power. Woo. It has absolutely nothing to do with anything your physical senses can detect. And as I move and groove, taking the next painful step forward, I wish somebody would. Talk about the big one. The small one. The fat one. The skinny one. The rich one. The poor one.
My goodness. Tristan Cunningham as Jay in Cutting Ball Theater's production of Tenderloin, which continues at the theater until June the 3rd. Have you seen Jay since then?
You know, I saw him once. It was quick. It was about a 5-minute interview, and I haven't seen him since then. But other cast members did see him one day. And I've looked for him. It was a Sunday that he was out there. And so I try to peek on Sunday. We have shows on Sunday. So I try to peek where I met him. But I haven't gotten to see him again.
Do you have a sense, Annie Elias, of, you know, the play is bringing these characters into the theater on the stage. But is it bringing the neighborhood as well? Have any of the people who are shown on stage come to the play?
They have, and it's been really amazing to have them there. You know, it's one thing to interview someone, to portray them, but to have them in the front row it's a powerful exchange in that moment. And Mark has come.
Right.
Elaine Zamora, Captain Jimenez, and more coming. So,
can you say something, Tristan, about playing, as you said before, the truest part of the Tenderloin, which involves the eloquence and power you just demonstrated, but also, you know, there are real problems, dark problems. Yeah. Why is that important to also show, to not sort of pull the blinds over?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, as I said before, it's something that exists, and I don't think it serves anybody to say that that's not happening. And one thing that I really have loved working with Annie is she is fearless, and she was really clear with us from the beginning that she wants all voices, everybody's voice, you know, people that are living in the Tenderloin that are okay, people that don't live in the Tenderloin, maybe their opinions about it, people who are living on the street. And we had done a reading before the play had opened, and one thing that Annie talked to us after the reading is we don't have enough voices from the street. So she actually sent us out again to really try, because that is, you know, that is something we all see. And so she said, you know, this is important. We need to get this voice. So she, you know, sent us out again to really hear those people.
What do you want people to see when they walk through your neighborhood, Mark Ellinger?
Well, a number of things. I've tried to point out the neighborhood through the architecture, because it's remarkable architecture. It's all Ecole des Beaux-Arts, City Beautiful Movement inspired. It was all built within a 2.5-decade period following the 1906 earthquake and fire. And it's the only place in the entire country where there is such a dense concentration of this type of architecture. And even though it's a lot of it's decayed and looking pretty seedy these days, it's remarkable. The neighborhood has an incredible ambiance because of it. So that is the vehicle that I started with. But, you know, I've since then gone on to do a lot of historical research, and it has one of the richest histories of any neighborhood in San Francisco.
It's both. I mean, it's both the beauty and the decay, right?
Absolutely.
And the portrait has to include.
Well, for me, it does. Yeah.
David Snyka, one of the things that comes through as I read the script is also a sense of safety, which we have to go to a break. So it's unfair to ask you this question right before a break. But it's interesting to me that people feel maybe it shouldn't be surprising to me, but there's a sense of safety, a sense of home.
Yeah. There is really a part of the Tenderloin that people don't – that is not so obvious to the senses when you are just walking through, that is about an extremely tight-knit neighborhood and a number of subcultures in that neighborhood that are very, very tight-knit that do look out for each other. And it's extraordinary how much you don't see that really is authentic and true to that place.
And we'll talk more about what's true to the Tenderloin, what's there and what isn't, when we return. And we'd like to hear from you as well. Have you been through the Tenderloin? Do you live there? What do you think of it? 866-733-6786. I'm Dave Iverson, and this is Forum. Welcome back to Forum. I'm Dave Iverson. Our topic this hour, the Tenderloin, both the place and the play. It's a new play being staged right now at the Cutting Ball Theater, which is at Exit on Taylor. It's written, directed by Annie Elias. We're joined this morning by Annie Elias, along with two members of the cast, Tristan Cunningham and David Sinaiko, along with Mark Ellinger, who is a photographer who has portrayed the Tenderloin on his website, Up From the Deep, and is also portrayed by David Sinaiko as a character in the play. We'd like to know what you think of the Tenderloin as well. Do you live or work there? What do you think of your experience there? What is it about that neighborhood that people ought to see and understand? You can join us at 866-733-6786, 866-733-6786. Before the break, we were talking a little bit about the Tenderloin as home, and I just want to reference, it's not a character either of you play, but I was struck by it when I was reading the script. It's Nappy, mm-hmm. and he's talking about being a single father and having this baby that he kind of winds up with almost by accident, and it's a funny passage, and at least it reads that way, and he says toward the end of this monologue, the weird thing was I felt safe. I'd be around people and I know their particular ways or were letting particular ways that I wouldn't recommend. But with the baby, it was safe, you know, and stuff. The baby was safe. I knew they wouldn't do nothing around the baby. So there was like an actual edge that I had with a baby. So it worked in lots of ways.
Mm. Yeah, I love the way the play, so many people talk about safety in the play, and it sort of turns our expectations on its head. You know, the idea of that a baby, you know, we're of course fearful for the baby and the baby's safety. You know, he says, I was living in this notorious hotel on Sixth Street. But I think, and you know, there are a lot of children who live in the Tenderloin, and that was one of the surprises for us as we, you know, researched and found out more about it. And of course you think of, well, what's the experience like for those children? You know, how do they feel? And there are children portrayed in the show in the Tenderloin. But the presence of the child makes the neighborhood safer, which is, you know, a surprising, you know, that's illuminating. It was illuminating to hear that. That people behave differently around the children, and that it would be not be you know, it would be a much different neighborhood without those kids and families.
Tristan, when you talk to young people like the character you portrayed before, or younger still, children, I mean, what did you hear? What did you see?
So I did do an interview at the Boys and Girls Club with some younger kids, and I you know, I heard a lot, and it was really interesting because they, you know, kids are so aware, they're aware of what's going on, but it was really interesting to hear how they see it, and also just to hear that, you know, those things are existing. They're aware of that there's pigeons, and they would tell me, you know, there's pigeons because there's garbage, but also they love this neighborhood, and they love that their friends are close by them, and just all the parts that they love about it. They're able to push the, you know, the poop of the pigeons to the side because they love walking to the Boys and Girls Club.
So what did they love?
Say that again?
What did they love?
Specifically the young girl that I play, she loves the Boys and Girls Club, and she loves her friends who are in the Tenderloin. And there's another young character portrayed in the play, and she talks about how it's amazing for her to live there. She just, you know, is beside herself. She loves it. Her friends live right by her, and she has there's so much diversity in that neighborhood. And she even talks about how, you know, you're probably jealous of where I live because, you know, I live by all my friends and there's all this stuff around us. So I think they just love the community of it.
We should note, by the way, that the Cutting Ball Theater is giving away free tickets to neighborhood residents. If you want to find out more information about that, you can go actually to the KQED website, and there's a link there. So go to kqed.org/forum, and you can find out more about seeing the play. Let's hear what some of our callers have to say about the Tenderloin. Ash joins us first in San Francisco. Ash?
Yes.
Go ahead. You're on the air.
Well, I was calling in regarding to living in this neighborhood for the past few years and noticing the gradual gentrification of it. And that they have all these poor people in the SROs that the mayors, one after the other, have developed several programs to get people off of the streets into these SROs. And now that this gentrification is occurring, they're coming up with new ways to kick the poor people out so they can find higher-paying residents.
And where do you live now, Ash?
Oh, I live in the Tenderloin on Leavenworth and Ellis.
And in an SRO?
Yes.
Yeah. Thanks. And it would just, well, hang on one sec, Ash. What do you want people to know about that? What's your how do you think the city really ought to respond in and not sort of pursue the path that you're saying the city is pursuing?
Well, I don't necessarily think it's the city itself. I think it's the individual SROs, because poor people have mental problems a lot of times. They have drug problems because they've had to deal with being poor. So the complications that the staff and the people that own the buildings, et cetera, have to go through are perhaps a bit too much, and they're looking for ways to simplify their own lives by getting problem people back out on the streets and paying respectable people into
yeah.
their buildings.
Ash, thank you. David Sanaga, you play part of a couple, the Loopers, who own an SRO. Can you respond to what Ash was saying and this push and pull about what the SROs offer and perhaps this push towards upscaling them?
Sure. It's really fascinating and complicated issue in that neighborhood in the Tenderloin. Myself and Rebecca Frank, another member of the cast, interviewed Leroy and Kathy Looper, who own the Hotel Cadillac, which is on Eddie and Leavenworth. And a part of the play explores the idea of the fact that some people think of the Tenderloin as what they call a containment zone, a place where all the social services, many of the social services in the city have been moved into one area, the Tenderloin, and many of these SROs are...
we should say, by the way, the shorthand phrase SRO stands for single residency occupancy.
Single room occupancy.
Single room occupancy.
Hotels, which have been there, as Mark said, since post the earthquake, big earthquake in 06. But so the social services have been moved into the neighborhood, and also hotels are being used as halfway houses and board and care, or in lieu of board and care homes. So there is a high concentration of people, as Ash said, with mental illness, people with terrible drug problems, and also parolees, convicts who are on parole, which is both very a great service because these people need a place to live. And gentrification does threaten that to a certain extent. One of the things Kathy Looper, the character I play, talks about is that in order to move parolees or people with mental illness who need halfway houses to live, they actually moved other poor residents out. I think what Ash brings up is really interesting because there is a sense of where will these people go if they don't have the Tenderloin to live in.
Is that a really common concern and sentiment, Mark Ellinger, that you hear about we're going to be – if the Tenderloin starts getting better, we're going to lose?
Absolutely. It's a reality. I mean, what Ash described is absolutely true. Unfortunately – the nonprofit corporations that have taken over some of the SROs, while they have upgraded them and restored them to some of their former grandeur, the system involves multi-stages of management. So there's a real disconnect between the people that live in these places and the people that run them, which has created a lot of the problems that Ash described. So, yes, it's a reality.
Here from more of our listeners, Molly wants to talk about the Tenderloin. Molly, go ahead, please.
Oh, hi. Yes, I came to the Tenderloin down on my luck from different set of circumstances. I had to leave my home during a divorce. I left the Tonier neighborhood. I wanted to stay in San Francisco, and suddenly finding myself a very limited means, the Tenderloin was the place that I could afford. And I had a lot of well-meaning friends very giving me pitying glances and, you know, testing, and I quickly found that the neighborhood was everything I could have, you know, hoped for had I had my choice of places to go. It was vibrant. It was, you know, evolving throughout the day with the different groups of people that would come depending on the time of day that you were there and into the evening. And it was definitely a very close-knit neighborhood. I found in short order that I was a familiar face, and faces around me were familiar faces. And actually, when I left years later to relocate due to a job, I never found that in my other neighborhood. And visiting friends in, you know, more popular neighborhoods, maybe with people of my generation, I never got that feeling, you know, of familiarity in the Mission or other neighborhoods that maybe had the cachet that the Tenderloin didn't have. And I'm definitely going to see the play. And as a side note, the architecture blew me away. To actually get out of the street and go into some of the places, the buildings in the Tenderloin, it's breathtaking. It's museum quality eye candy around you all the time.
Molly, thanks.
I love it.
Yeah, thank you. Thanks for the call. Would you live there, Tristan?
Yes, I would. Yeah, I'm not sure. The play has helped me make that decision.
Yeah.
But I think I would.
And is it some of what I'm hearing people say about a sense of both safety and community, that people recognize you?
Yeah, I mean, even there was one day where we did some walking around to try to do some interviews, and we met some guys on a corner, and then we ended up seeing them down the street, and they said, "Hey, Tristan, it's hard." It's just like, you know, that I think Molly's right, that doesn't happen everywhere, and it was a really nice feeling.
I want to ask you each to do a character again. David, do you want to do one of your characters, please?
Sure. This is a story that was told to me by Kathy Looper, who is one of the owners of the Hotel Cadillac, wife of the late Leroy Looper, who was actually known as the father of the Tenderloin, a very iconic kind of legendary figure in the neighborhood and in the city, who passed away just this past fall, not long after Rebecca Frank and I interviewed Kathy and Leroy. And this is her reminiscing about, she grew up in San Francisco, reminiscing about what Central City was like when she was a little girl. I remember Market Street when I was a girl in the 60s. It was packed with people. Even mid-market, it was packed. Because they had great shops all the way up to Civic Center. They had the Grand Central Market. It was this huge block-long building like a barn, and it had 1,000 vegetable markets, and each one was an individual vendor. My father used to go there all the time because we could get fresh juice squeezed from vegetables, and he would drink that for his heart condition and then pour salt on him, you know. And one time I came back with a chameleon that changed colors, and it, like it would be that color on you and this color on me, and had a little chain around its poor little foot, you know. I mean, you could just buy anything, and people just and great meat markets where the meats looked like they were hand-carved works of art. I'm serious. It was just an amazing place. And they closed all that stuff down to redevelop it. And that's when Market Street died. They never tell you the reason Market Street died was because they redeveloped it. When they redeveloped it for BART, they closed that whole street down. Everything died. It's never been back.
You're a really good middle-aged woman.
People have been telling me that. I don't know what to think about it.
David Sinico playing the role of Kathy Looper within the play, The Tenderloin. Mm-hmm. Let's hear from Donna next, who joins us from Belvedere. Donna, go ahead.
Hi, I just wanted to send out congratulations to the writer and the actors of this performance. We saw it last Sunday. I took my son and my husband and I went, and I thought it was fantastic. I worked in the Tenderloin area about 20 years ago and have driven through there numerous times with the kids and sort of talked to them about what it was like when I worked down there. And just seeing this performance, I just thought it was outstanding, and I just wanted to call and encourage anyone who can get down there and see it to support the theater and to see this performance, because I just thought it was rich and diverse and thought-provoking and just a wonderful, wonderful evening. So that's all I wanted to say. And thanks and kudos to all of you.
Thank you. I'll take my comments
off the air.
Thanks. Thanks, Donna. Thanks for the call.
Would this be a moment to give the phone number?
Go ahead. Sure.
525-1205, or you can go to cuttingball.com.
Cuttingball.com. And again, the play runs, Annie, through June 3rd. Mm-hmm. So another 3 weeks or so. Kevin in the Tenderloin joins us. Kevin, I'm sorry, I'm going to Mitch next. Mitch, go ahead, please.
Hey there. I was excited to turn on the radio and hear you talking about my neighborhood. I've lived in here for the last 14 years, but I live on the top edge, so there's some debate about whether it's the Tenderloin or Loin Heights. But the reason I really like it most is it's the most inclusive neighborhood and one of the most inclusive cities in the country. This is not a neighborhood that you're likely to get kicked out of. You might get kicked into it, and that makes it full of opportunity. But I'll also say that, you know, there's so much diversity here. I'm a parent now. I have my daughter here, so she's lived with us now for 4 years, and her birthday's coming up this weekend. But the diversity of people is so important, you know, to me and my wife, and it's not just the ages and the races, but the incomes as well. I grew up in a suburban Phoenix where everything was walled yards and locked doors and gated communities. So people get very suspicious of one another because you never see them. You never know what they're doing. And in the Tenderloin, it's really the opposite. You know a lot about your neighbors, and it makes us very close. So I'm close to the businesses here, and I'm closer to the neighbors in my building than I've been in any neighborhood that I've ever lived. Mm-hmm. And I think part of that is because of the nature of what it is to live here. It's the history. It's impossible to ignore it, even when you might want to, and that makes it important for the people who live here to contribute to it.
Mitch, thank you. So. Thanks for that, for your observations, and for speaking about the Tenderloin that is your home. And there is history that's contained within the play. There's the history that you were reviewing, David, that the character Kathy plays. There's a lot of history on Mark Ellinger's website about various neighborhoods in San Francisco, not just the Tenderloin. Again, his website is Up From the Deep. Email from Stephen. He writes in, I live in the Tenderloin. People who view it as either the dumping ground for the poor or colorful in its eccentricities view it only as someplace other than where they live. When you live in the Tenderloin, you see it as a place where real people live and struggle with all the complexities of life without romanticizing it. Is that something of a danger, do you think? I mean, even within this program, are we sort of gilding it a bit and giving it maybe too much of a gloss? Or no?
Yeah, you know, go ahead, Mark.
I would just say this. For all of its rawness and grittiness, it is absolutely real. It is what makes it the incredible place that it is. That gentleman's observation is absolutely dead on as far as I'm concerned. Yeah.
There's a character, as I recall in the play, I can't remember who it says at one point, you can be real here. Mm-hmm. You don't have to be phony like in the Castro.
That's right.
David, go ahead.
I was just going to say that it is extremely complex because it isn't the safest place you could possibly live. That's absolutely true. One character does observe that one of the things you see a lot is you do see a lot of drug use and you see a lot of drug dealing going on in the Tenderloin. And one character observes that who is a resident of the neighborhood says a lot of the people who are engaged in that actually don't live in the neighborhood. But some of the less visible populations are, I think, what some of the callers and what the emailer are talking about. I interviewed Jane Kim, who's the supervisor of six district supervisor, which includes a Tenderloin. She said an interesting thing. She's not in – her character didn't end up in the play, but one of the things she said is it's often the first place and the last place people live in the city. It's a lot of immigrants who live there who are very hard to see. It's a very invisible population. And there are many, many senior citizens and older people who are living there because that's where they end up if they don't have families or more means. And these are things you don't see when you just drive through and see some of the more active, I guess you could say in air quotes, lively stuff on the street.
What would you like people to know about the Tenderloin that you don't think they know, Tristan?
Well, I think one of the most powerful things for me is just to give these people a voice. You know, I think, like David was saying, it's, you know, you drive through and you just see it. But to actually hear, you know, with Jay, to actually hear his voice is so powerful.
And it's a full voice. I mean, when you did Jay, you were doing all of him, you know, physically, all of the pauses, all of the all of the gestures, all of the sound effects, all of him.
Yeah. Yeah, it's definitely a full voice. And I think what I realized in interviewing these people is often people don't ask them their story or to even hear their voice. So it was really amazing to get to do that.
Mark Ellinger?
Actually, that's something that I frequently stress to people is all you have to do is start talking to people. It's really easy because people in the Tenderloin, believe me, they love stories sharing their stories. They have unbelievable stories. So just to overcome one's fears of communication or contact, it's an easy step, actually.
The challenge, I suspect, is not so much getting people to talk. The challenge is to listen, I suppose.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Yeah? That's absolutely true.
That's right.
Yeah.
And to be open, you know.
David, what were you going to add about listening?
I just think that a lot of the sensory input you get in the tenderloin, the smells, which are not all that pleasant, and the things that may feel threatening to you do make it hard to stay open. And I was going to say it's kind of I feel like it was a gift of having this show to sort of as a job go and have it be my mission to be open. And you know, after talking to Mark, I do look at these buildings with awe and fascination, like the caller earlier. There's beautiful stuff if you look up, if you're not just looking down and trying to get through, but if you look up. It's a loud place, and it can be occasionally a smelly place, but it's so fascinating.
Case in point about built-in prejudices, I just want to point out that you said the smells are unpleasant. I would just like to say that the smells are diverse because the Tenderloin has an enormous number of incredible restaurants in it.
Yeah,
so
that's true.
Well, the Tenderloin, the play and the neighborhood. Again, it continues at the Cutting Ball Theater, exit on Taylor until June the 3rd. This is a fundraising period for KQED Public Radio. For more information about how to support KQED, go to kqed.org. I'm Dave Iverson. Let's take another call. Kevin joins us next from the Tenderloin. Kevin, go ahead.
Yes, I live on Turk Street between Leavenworth and Hyde, and I've lived here. Next month will be 1 year. It's a 50-year-old building I live in. It's 16 floors, and it's one of the more modern buildings. All of the units have balconies, so I was able to move down here from the Castro, where I lived in a beautiful area, 20th and Noe, expensive, and get a view with a studio apartment at a moderate price. Although I'm paying twice what some of my neighbors are in the same floor, same building, that have been here a much longer time. But there's pluses and minuses living here. Some of the negatives have already been mentioned, the smell of urine walking down the street, the colorful characters on the street, the urban noise that I wasn't used to in the Castro, like the ecology trucks and the street sweepers rumbling down the street almost 24 hours a day.
Yeah,
but the pluses are the fact that I can walk to Union Square, Market Street, I can walk to the Ballet, the Symphony, the Opera, the New Conservatory of Theater, the San Francisco Conservatory of Music, Union Square, etc. The library is over here, the Asian Art Museum. I probably sound like a commercial or advertiser, but that's a big plus, I think, in this neighborhood.
Yeah, Kevin, thank you. It's all of it. It's all of it. Kevin, thanks for the call. I want to close by asking you, Tristan, to do one more character, if you would, please.
Sure, yeah. This is an older gentleman who has been in the Tenderloin for a long time. So. William Ray Smith. I'm from my mama's womb. Thank you, Lord. Yes, and I've been here since 1957. California, San Francisco, the great golden state, California. I've been getting around. I reside here. Yes, I was blessed by the Creator. I hope you can see that. We are all blessed. You are blessed at this present day to come in and receive what I have to express to you, our interview right today that we are conducting right now. Excuse me. I'm repeating myself. Yes, I believe it's a very beautiful part of life that God created for the ones that must experience that livelihood of living. Whatever they are born there, then that's where God created for you to be. Then if you come within the wisdom of yourself and don't want to be there anymore, that's your chosen. That's your choice. But the Tenderloin. The Tenderloin has always been a place in my heart. I reminisce maybe twice a month. Doing this interview, I'm reminiscing on a lot of things going through my mind right now. That's why I'm stuck here trying to express myself a little bit better than I'm doing. Well, God didn't build Rome in one day, so we could continue this at another day.
Yes, I love acquaintances. I love a good people that is receiving something I can put forth out there. I hope you can receive what I put forth and put progress with it in a positive way to say we are all God's creations. And we must spread the word of love in this livelihood. I mean, life is good, but snakes in hell, kill, sugar and spice, everything nice. But I love doing what I'm doing with you right now. Yes, I cannot pronounce my words because my dental's gone. And I got to concentrate on getting that. But that's negative things. I try to keep that out of my livelihood. It's all about that 500. As long as you betting at 500, that's your betting average, you can succeed. You're gonna have a feeling to reach your dreams and go. Am I right or wrong? Keep on pushing. I walk through every day. And some people say, hey, man. And I say, hey, brother. I walk through the whole world every day. I'm a human male. My creator knows. I fear no evil.
Tristan Cunningham, who plays the role of William, Jay, and many more in the production of Tenderloin, now at the Cutting Ball Theater in San Francisco, exit on Taylor. I want to thank Tristan, along with Mark Ellinger, David Sinaiko, and Annie Elias for being here today and for helping to tell this story, the story of the Tenderloin. Thanks all very much.
Thank you so much.
Forum is produced by Tina Lorberg and Judy Campbell. Our senior editor is Dan Zoll. Danny Bringer is our engineer, and Raul Ramirez is our executive producer. I'm Dave Iverson, and this is Forum on KQED.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation in honor of Louise and Claude Rosenberg.